live from my man cave in Chesapeake, Virginia, this is MLS Gone Wild. I'm your host, Blake, here to bring you the latest news, rumors, opinions, analytics, interviews, and all things MLS and American soccer. Let's get it going. Hello and welcome to episode 100 of MLS Gone Wild podcast. This is your host, Blake. To celebrate the century mark and the closing of MLS's secondary transfer window, I'm joined by MLS insider for The Athletic and World Soccer Talk writer of the year, Tommy Scoops, or as he's recently been dubbed today, Commie Tommy, Tom Bogert. Tom, welcome back to MLS Gone Wild, man.
What's going on? Great to be back. Always good fun, and always good fun on Twitter.
Commie Tommy. I mean, that's a first, right?
I was dying. That's why I thought it was hilarious. It's like, oh my God.
General laughter. You responded to that with a ha 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 ha, and I'm sure you were actually laughing in real time.
Yeah, that was genuine. I was, and like, sort of my friends are dying. They're like, ha ha ha, like, when did you get radicalized? I've enjoyed it. It's fun.
It's the mustache.
Yeah. That wasn't great. There was a lot of quick pictures of Stalin. I was like, oh man, I set myself up for this.
People are so quick on Twitter, and it's not even Twitter anymore. It's X, whatever. Yeah. People are so quick with the memes.
Yeah, I respect it.
Yeah. But you survived another MLS transfer window. Tom, wrong answers only. How the hell did you do it?
Oh my God. Not with the right answer. It was just not doing anything healthy for a little while. So I ended up having a men's league game last night and like just woefully out of shape. So I was paying for it then. But yeah, a lot of screen time, a lot of staring at phones and trying to get to the beach whenever I could. But yeah, so that's how we got through.
So your phone survived as well. You were joking around on X saying that you were going to be tossing it into the ocean. It survived.
It did survive. That's why I was proud. Good restraint. I figured that'd be too expensive. I don't make enough to be cycling through phones like that. So I kept it in the pocket.
Does a guy like you only have one phone?
Yeah. And like, truth be told, I swear to God, like if it wasn't so sketchy to have a flip phone, like I want to get a flip phone to have and like just have like my family and closest friends have it. And then like when I'm like going out or going to do something, like just bring the flip phone. And like, I've been saying this for like 2 years and like, I'm really getting close to the point where like, I have to do it. I've definitely like planted the seeds enough to like my girlfriend and my family to like, cause if you just show up with a burner phone, like, dude, what the fuck's going on? Like, that's sketchy. Like, why do you have that? But I've said it for long enough that like, I think it's genuine where they know, oh yeah, like you just don't want to be bothered by like, you know, smartphone stuff. And like, you also can't just leave your phone behind all the time, which sometimes I try to do. So I think it would be a good balance.
Yeah, not only burner phone, but make it like a pay as you go, you know.
Get a new number every month.
Yeah, throw it all the way back. So if you do throw it in the ocean, it's not a big deal.
Exactly. But then I'd be too tempted to.
All right, so Tom, you put out a list of superlatives today on The Athletic, but I have some different ones for you. So the first one's going to be on brand for this podcast. What was the most MLS Gone Wild story from this transfer window?
Recency bias, but Liam Frazier's right of first refusal being traded to Minnesota for $50,000 in allocation money and then being traded to Dallas for $100,000 back-to-back and then Dallas signing him. For, like, again, this is an inconsequential player. I don't mean to be mean to Liam Frazier, but like this is somebody that Dallas are signing as like backup rotation. Like he wasn't playing very much with Toronto. He went to Europe for a little bit. So it's just an incredible inside MLS. Like what are all these terms mean and what the hell is going on and what's the point? So I think that comes to mind pretty quickly.
So what the hell is going on? How did Minnesota end up getting that traded to them? How did Dallas end up with it? Like what is the right of first refusal and how the hell did it somehow end up in Dallas's lap?
Yeah, so Minnesota acquired it because they must have been looking into signing the player and ended up going to Dallas. And thankfully, they didn't hold it like hostage. I found it weird that like they also had Kiki Oliveira's discovery rights, and LAFC had to give them like $175,000 for that, which I thought was deep. I think that's one thing I would get rid of if I could, or like maybe even if it's not getting rid of it, it's like all right. Like you can't hold these hostage. It has to be a set $50,000 or $100,000. Like it can't be a deal by deal basis. So, So I guess Minnesota tried to sign him and didn't.
Okay, I'm a Liam Frazier fan. He used to be a Columbus Crew guy. I'm a Columbus Crew fan. I thought he's okay. He's got a nice little left foot, technical player. So he's good depth for Dallas, I think.
I agree, and like that's the thing. Like it's just funny. This wasn't like, you know, sometimes like people be going on the allocation order and like trading a couple hundred thousand for like a big player to come back, or like, oh, here comes Lucho Acosta, and this is how since he re-signed him, and this is like several transactions to re-sign Liam Frazier to probably like a senior minimum or something like that. So it's just a whole lot of like work and paperwork, I'd imagine, for this deal.
Yeah, that's MLS Gone Wild for sure. And it just happened. Is there anything else going on like right now?
That's the thing, man. It's frustrating to me that, so it's a team by team basis. Like the debt, like this deal was done. That means Tuesday night. Well, that was the deadline, right? No, Wednesday night. It's Friday. It's Friday at 6 p.m. as we're recording. This got announced at Friday at 5. The deadline was 2 days ago. Teams don't have to announce. They should, but some teams won't announce until they have a visa. Like I don't even remember what signing it was, but it was like NYCFC or the Red Bulls. Like I had reported that they made a signing, and it was like a week and a half after the window closed. I was like, what the hell's going on here? Well, I was like, I'm very confident in what I reported, but I was like, why haven't you guys announced? It's like, oh, we're waiting until he gets his visa and then we're going to announce. Why? It's like the deadline closed a week ago. So like, I think NYCFC are signing Maxi Morales. Like that's been reported, but that's not been announced yet. And like NYCFC play by their own rules in terms of like PR and like media stuff. So like, it's not necessarily like they announced a signing earlier today. So like, those are a couple ones we know of, but hey, who knows? Maybe there's a few more signings that just nobody knows about yet.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. Yeah. All right, let's keep it moving down the superlatives. Which transfer was the hardest for you to keep a secret?
Oh, hardest to keep a secret. I don't know. There's a bunch that I was obviously, you know, you hear a little bit about. I saw it came out today that the Austin FC tech sporting director, Rodolfo Burrells, like more or less blamed me for how that they told Diego Fagundes about the trade. He said something to the effect of, we had to call him because we found out a reporter like had it and like he couldn't find out. Like that deal didn't come out of nowhere. Like that was in the works for a little while. So like they could have looped Diego Fagundes into the process before the deal was done, which is what some teams do. And I respect some teams that it's like, that's not exactly the answer. I'm rambling a little bit here. So that's, it didn't, nothing really comes to mind. Like there was, the Zellerion one. And that wasn't even long. Like I'd heard a little bit about it. And then I was like, oh my God, like I got it. Like, and this is happening. Like, get it. Like, double source, triple source, all this, because it's really big news and really important and definitive. And then like I had heard that the club, it was like, yeah, no, this is totally done, like it's probably going to be announced today. And like I sent it to editors and like my anxiety is going nuts as I'm just staring at the clock and refreshing Columbus's Twitter and my email to make sure that like while they're editing it and putting it up that like I didn't get beat, because it's just like the editorial process. So like that was something that was like the most miserable, but it was only like 10 minutes because my editors took it very seriously and were as quick as they possibly could be. But just like from me sending them the doc and then like refresh, where is it? Oh my God, I'm going to miss it. Oh my God. Like, and again, that's just what the anxiety does. So it's.
So be honest with me, when I DM'd you, what was it? It was probably a week ago, Friday. I was sitting at dinner with my fiance and that came across my phone, the Zellerion rumor. Had you already heard about it then?
It was around that time. And I think you said something more definitive or whatever you told me. Like, I don't want to be like, oh yeah, bro. No, I definitely knew about that. Like, no.
But well, I appreciate that about you.
That you said like, whatever you said, it was like a step further. And it was like, okay. So now I'm hearing this from somebody else. Like I heard, I was like, yo, this might be happening. Not might be happening. Like a Saudi club, like might be. And like, my first thought was like, yeah, I'm sure they're trying. Like, all right, like, let's see if like this goes anywhere before I start like really annoying people about it. And then when you were like, dude, like, I think it's like, this is like something that I was like, all right, so this really is, not only is it real, but like, it's clearly being considered, or it would have been just rejected out of hand. Right. Or like, so like that definitely accelerated for me to be like, okay, like this has to be like on the front of my radar and I need to be annoying people like as this develops.
All right. Your favorite transfer rumor from this window.
Chucky Lozano.
I knew that was coming.
That was fun.
what was it? His real estate agent? Was that what it was?
Yeah. And then the guy's been claiming to have interviews with the guys with Chucky's agent, which is also really funny. It's just, and like, dude, but like, I don't want to, other than that random guy, because he tweeted at me about 15,000 times saying I was going to owe him an apology and all this dumb stuff. And he's at Masterclass right now and never take the L. He's still saying that I was a liar and that all this stuff. But like, again, like when I reported a week and a half ago, like I was told for like 2 weeks, not only is like, no, this isn't happening. It was like, dude, I have no idea where this is coming from. This is like, there is no truth. It's just like, we haven't had conversations. And like, yeah, I don't know. So like, it was weird that this persisted for so long. There was like, some actual reporters in Mexico that had like seemed to be like what they believed to be real information. And like, who knows, maybe there was intermediaries working on this, but like, as far as I know, like the players, like direct camp and LAFC, this was nothing. There were like, you'll be surprised to hear there was no $19 million bid by LAFC for a 28-year-old player who has 1 year left on his contract. Like, no, that didn't happen. And do you think Napoli would have rejected that? Like, it's just, I don't know. Like, I've seen fake rumors. I've seen things that are blown out of proportion. I've never seen something that, like, as far as I knew, it was just like, not like from like out of thin air and then like delivered with such consistent, like, no, this is really about to happen. Like, it's just, it's not even like, oh, this team is interested. It was like, no, this deal is about to be signed. He's getting on a plane. And I was like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, that was a fun interaction on Twitter to follow, definitely. And I figured that answer was coming, but I needed to hear it from you.
I enjoyed that. I like it. So I get like text from people about it. It's just like, I'll look at like my notifications and be like, yeah, you know, I probably shouldn't be doing this, but it's just like, this is like who I am. So
okay. Yeah, I'll play the game, right?
And look, and like, because I believe like, dude, like that guy was being a dick to me. That's fair. Like, fair enough. Like, you're allowed to be a dick to me. Like, again, like I say this to like sources too. I'm like, don't be afraid to call me if you disagree or like yell at me or tell me I'm stupid. Like, if my job is to talk about either my opinion or like what you guys are doing, like I'd be extremely soft if I was like, no, I don't ever want any criticism. And so like, if you don't like me, that's totally fair. I understand. Like, cause I'm really like, I try to be genuine. So I understand that that's not going to rub everybody the right way, but like, I pride myself on like, you know what you're getting, whether you do or don't like me, and you can make a decision based on that. So again, if you want to be a dick to me, that's fine. But if you're going to be a dick to me, then like, you have to understand it's coming back, man. Like, it's coming back. And like, the dude to go on, like, he claimed several times that I'm taking a step away, taking a break because of all the toxicity. It's like, dude, you've been yelling at me on Twitter for the last 5 days, and now you're saying that people are being toxic to you. Like, dude, like, if you're going to take swings, like, it's coming back, man. Like, and I just think that that's fair. That's how it should work. Like, I'm not above criticism, and I'm not above people telling me I'm an idiot. Like, I'm going to tell you and you're an idiot too. Like, fair enough.
Oh, that's awesome. Call me Tommy. All right, last superlative here before we get into the meat and potatoes of the episode. The free agent most likely to still get signed.
Oh, that's a great question, man. I don't know. So, I mean, like, it's already done. Maya Yoshida would have been the first one off the top of my head, just obviously because of the knowledge I had on that before it was announced. Dude, I don't know why nobody signed Josh Cohen in MLS, the American goalkeeper who played for Maccabi Haifa. Last summer, he was, like, and they designed his deal to expire. At like, he signed a couple short-term deals. He's like, I'm going to bet on myself. I'm going to play well. And then my goal is to eventually probably get back to MLS. And I thought for sure last summer he was going to sign. And it just didn't work out. He had like a little shoulder injury. So like that made things a little bit more difficult. So he's like, fine, I'll sign another 1 year deal with Haifa. And he's been phenomenal with that club. And he's not asking for that much money. Like, he's like extremely reasonable. It's like to the point where like, if you're starting goalkeeper, isn't like one of the most, you know, 5 or 7 highest paid keepers in the league, you could probably fit him like technically as a backup. And I think that he's like a legitimate, really good starter, or like could be. So like, I'm shocked that he hasn't been signed yet. It's like the goalkeeper market in MLS is like pretty strong right now. Like, usually there's backups being traded, or like, I don't know, the Galaxy have Bond, and I'm kind of blanking on the Serbian guy that they signed on loan, Mio Kovacic. I definitely butchered that. Regardless, but like, those are two pretty good keepers. Those two international keepers. Then like, Colorado has Yarbrough and Illich, who they brought on loan. And like, I feel like other years, teams would be calling Colorado for Yarbrough, or teams would be calling the Galaxy for Bond or one of their other backups. Like, there's a lot of good keepers in the league right now. So I guess like, that's like, the market isn't really strong, but like, I don't know, man, I'm a big fan of Josh Cohen's, and like, he wants to be here. He's not asking for like a stupid amount of money. And like, he's a good keeper. It's just, it's weird that hasn't happened yet.
That is interesting. Where is he from?
California. He played for Sacramento Republic before he went to Israel.
Okay. All right, let's get into it. This window saw 10 new DPs join the league, headlined by Lionel Messi, to Miami. Teams trade away their best players to the global markets in Saudi Arabia and Qatar, but not miss a beat in signing their replacements. Former, and I should add, very good MLS players rejoining the league in order to continue their careers. The second most expensive trade in MLS history, and so much more. We'll start this episode out by looking at this window through a very wide lens, Tom. What did this window mean for the progression of MLS? And was this the best transfer window in league history?
So I really hate to be like reductionist to like bring it down to one person in one deal, but like it is binary. Like this is the window that Lionel Messi came, and like with all respect to everything else, like this is a one of one transaction. The only thing in MLS history that this can even compare to is Beckham, and like Beckham changed the league incredibly because the league wasn't ready for Beckham, and part of his legacy and his impact was not just legitimacy and everything else. His biggest impact was helping further along investment in infrastructure. Like when he came, there wasn't anywhere near as many soccer specific stadiums. It wasn't training facilities were a joke. The hotels that the teams were traveling to was a joke. Like I was reading Grant Wall's phenomenal book on the Beckham experiment. It's just like some of those details that sometimes you forget, like these like crappy meals and hotels and other things that these teams had to do just because the league was where it was at. Like his legacy is that it helped further the infrastructure. Now the infrastructure is elite. It's world class. Like, you know, not every single stadium, not every single training facility, but as a whole, there's a whole lot of really, really incredible facilities around the league. So Messi comes now, and this is another point where now it can jump again, because now the infrastructure is there. And if Messi comes, and then that brings Busquets and Alba. And look, like if he signed in Saudi Arabia, like we'd be in a borderline crisis right now. Because it'd be like, wow, like how do we, like if somebody's going to leave Europe, how do we convince them to come here and not Saudi Arabia? If, like with that money, can't compete with that money. So like that helped too. And look, like there's a lot of other important, again, like Diego Rossi coming back at 25, and like, I'm trying to like Sam Surridge could have stayed in Europe, and like, not that he's going to move the needle necessarily for like fan interest, but like that's a 25-year-old $6.5 million center forward. Like that player just always goes to like another championship team in England, or like a different, like Jovalich. He hasn't been like great for the Galaxy, but like these are the signings that bring things up a little bit more and a little bit more. So again, Messi is what's like the chance to kind of really transform stuff. And like Messi has helped reignite and like really ignite the discussion about roster rules, you know, for better or worse, because teams are complaining about Miami. And like, look, it's great that we're having these conversations, because like owners, like every owner I talk to outside of the ownership meetings at DC, and again, the people who were talking were more likely to say we want changes, but like everyone I was talking to was like, yeah, like hope we need to do something this winter. Like not just like, yeah, in the future maybe we should. Like no, I hope that we have positive changes to like lessen restrictions this winter. So like that's the kind of legacy, like that's the kind of opportunity that comes with Lionel Messi. And again, like there's a lot of other great stuff that happened, but like it's binary. Like this is the window that Lionel Messi came.
Yeah. So speaking about Messi, he's been phenomenal since his debut on July 21st. 5 goals in 3 games, 3 goals in his first hour, actually under his first hour of playing time as an Inter Miami player. That's absolutely ridiculous. Thanks. What has impressed you most about Messi since his arrival, outside of just being really fucking good at soccer?
Yeah, there's that. That's a good one. I mean, everything that you've seen from him throughout his career, everything you've heard about him, like, I knew that it wasn't like he was going to come here and dog it. I knew he wasn't going to come here. And like, he has like this easygoing way about him, because he's obviously the greatest player of all time. So, and like, he's like low key. So things like seem to be easy to him, but he clearly gives a shit, man. Like just that game against Orlando was so much fun, because like, yeah, maybe he should have gotten sent off, or like, but like, I love when players show a bite, let alone somebody as cerebral as Messi, somebody as like, he's not supposed to be the guy chirping with Felipe Martins. Like
that was awesome, man.
Yeah, right. Like his whole career, you have not like enforcers for like a hockey term, but like you have piano players, you have piano carriers. Like in a normal sequence, like that's Busquets, or you know, and you know, obviously he's a piano player too. But like you get my point. Like Messi's always is, and always will be the superstar on his team, and yet he's like getting into the mix a little bit. Like I love to see that. Like he's not, and like Beckham was like that too. And like sometimes it was a little petulant with Beckham, but like I love that. Like I would much rather that than like somebody coming here and like, oh, we gave up a goal, or oh, whatever. Like this is Miami when they're winning. like I don't know like what it'll look exactly like when if/when things go wrong, because it won't always be perfect. But like I think the thing that I've been most impressed at is like that, the understanding, one, understanding the moment, and two, that like he clearly gives a shit and like is like down to like get into like the dirtier side of the game in terms of talking crap and like getting stuck in, and like I don't know, man, like I just love seeing that stuff.
Yeah, a player that's won legitimately everything that you can win as a professional soccer player, coming off of winning a World Cup. And you just don't expect that. You expect him to come here, score goals, go home, come back, do the same thing all over again. Not sit there and talk shit to Felipe when he comes in and, you know, really throw his body around and be aggressive. Like, that's really good to see that, like you just said, he gives a shit. Like, that's really cool. Another thing.
And to be so, like, it doesn't sound like I'm just, like, riding for Messi here. Like, I love that Felipe didn't give a shit either. I love that Cesar Romo didn't give a shit.
Yeah.
The two of them were chirping. Like, Messi and him were going in the locker room, like, shoulder to shoulder. Like, it's awesome that, like, I'm sure that Cesar Romo and, like, Felipe Martins respect the hell out of him. But, like, when we're on the field, I'm not just going to, like, tiptoe around you just so I don't annoy Lionel Messi or whatever. Like, I love that that was going both ways. Like, it's, again, I think that that's always a part of a game that, like, I gravitate towards because, at the end of the day, there's a lot of beauty about this sport. And, but, like, competition is great too, man. And, like, sometimes when things get, like, a little bit bogged down and, like, you see just dudes who want to be warriors or dudes who are up for the fight, dudes who, like, when fight or flight comes, are you going to fight or are you going to run? And, like, I don't know, just maybe it's just the New Jersey in me, but, like, I feel like I pick up on that a lot.
I like that. 3-0 since Lionel Messi has come into the team. Little live bet here for you, Tom. I don't know if you'll take it or not, but if Miami make the playoffs, will you shave your mustache?
No. It's my entire bit. I can't be putting that on the line for anything. But, like, dude, so I feel like this went back and forth. There was, like, when Messi, like, announced that he was going to come, it was, like, the beginning of June or whatever, right? And so everyone was like, oh, my God, it's Lionel Messi. Of course they're going to make the playoffs. That's crazy. And then, like, the pendulum swung when they lost a few more games. And I was like, wait a minute, like, just basic math here. And, like, Sasha Kljestan, like, actually did the math. And it's like, this is what will happen. And then people are like, oh, yeah, no way they're going to make the playoffs. They can't. It doesn't matter who it is. And, like, now he's been here for three games. And it's like, oh, they're probably going to make the playoffs. So it's like, it's been funny to kind of, like, watch it go up and down. So, like, for me, it's going to be fun as hell to watch them chase. Like, this is what I was hoping to see last year with Toronto when Insigne and Bernadeschi came. I was like, all right, like, they have 7 points to make up or whatever it is. Like, here we go. It's going to be fun as hell. And then they just, the wheels fell off. And, you know, we've all seen how that went this year. So, like, now we're actually going to get the playoff chase. Because, like, I don't see a scenario in which they're not challenging for this, you know? So, I don't know. It's going to be fun. And, like, and they have the Open Cup as well on top of the League's Cup knockout. So, all of these games are going to have consequence. And it's just awesome. It's just awesome.
Yeah, and they're quickly building chemistry. Robert Taylor has been phenomenal out wide for Inter-Miami. Kromoski.
Who's Donald DeMaria when you have Bob Taylor?
Yeah, I heard Taylor Twellman throw that reference out there. And I was like, yeah, good point. Kromoski's been really, really good as well. Like, everybody has kind of stepped up a level since Lionel Messi's been with the team. So that bodes well for their playoff chances. But one last thing about Messi. So with him now in the league, you know, World Cup's going to be here in 2026. If you had to change, tweak, or implement a new roster rule heading into 2024, what would it be and why?
So Jorge Mas said this well. It's like, we could either do small changes or, like, big changes. And this is, it's a good way to frame the conversation that either way there's going to be a change. But so if they did a small change, and this is what I think is really easy to do, just change the U22 rule where you can have three senior DPs and, like, you don't have to do any cap gymnastics to get all three U22s. Like, I think that's an easy one. I don't even really know why they introduced this rule as it was. Like, I don't know why that they put unnecessary hoops. So that would be, again, that, I think that that's a very, very achievable, attainable goal. Outside of that, and look, I don't even know exactly, because I hear arguments for this either way, and I could probably be swayed either way, whether it's a fourth DP or it's just raising the cap. I would lean towards raising the cap as long as it's, like, a non-insignificant amount, if that makes, like, because then if it's going to be like, oh, we'll raise the cap 600,000, it's like, you know what, screw it. Just give me another DP then, because, like, that's not enough. So if it was a bigger change, like, that's what I'd go for. And then kind of, like, parallel to that, and I know that there have been discussions about this, of the internal transfer market shouldn't be allocation money anymore. It should be real money. But I think, like, it makes sense as it is now, partly because of the salary cap. So I think those two things would have to happen together, because if you get rid of that, then it's going to be more difficult for better players to get traded, because then it becomes a transfer fee all over again, and you're going to have to try to amortize that into the salary cap. Like, that's why Paul Arriola was able to be traded, and Mahalo Poku, like, they could, if it was real money, maybe they asked $3 million for it or whatever, right? And then he has to become or close to a DP, and that makes it more difficult for Montreal to get him. So I think that those two things need to come together, but those are two things, and for the future, I would like.
Okay. All right, so another team in the East that had a really active window outside of Miami, my beloved Columbus Crew, but it came at a cost. During this transfer window, the Columbus Crew transferred Lucas Ellerion to Saudi Pro League team for an undisclosed fee, and days later, they turned that open DP slot into 2020 Golden Boot winner Diego Rossi from Fenerbahce. Zelarayán was a club legend and will certainly be missed, but I want to focus on Rossi here. Seeing as he was primarily featured as a left winger throughout his professional career at LAFC specifically, how do you see his style of play translating into Wilfred Nancy's high-scoring 3-4-2-1?
I'm so excited. Like, I was a huge fan of Rossi with LAFC, like everybody else. That's not exactly a groundbreaking take. I think that, you know, he was kind of described as like this wide forward. Like, it worked really well because Vela would tuck in and he would pretty much always be vertical, dynamic, direct. And like that worked out so well. That's why he scored so well. Like, the goals that he had from the wing is atypical for a young player and again, that position. So he's phenomenal. I can't wait to see what he's going to look like playing kind of in the half spaces, because in the 3-4-2-1, you get your whip from the wing backs. And like, even look at Cucho. He was phenomenal last year. And like, the numbers don't exactly like jump off the page from this year, but like, he's got this well-roundedness to his game that like is awesome. And it's like flourishing on an onset. And like, I think that Rossi's going to show a new side of him that we haven't seen. Like, Romel Kyoto, Georgi Mihailovic had career best seasons under Nance. Like, Christian Ramirez has been really great for the crew. Again, Cucho, Zelarayán, I think he was in the middle of his best season ever. Just go down the line. Nance's track record with attackers is like glittering. So he absolutely deserves the benefit of the doubt. And again, the talent that I know Diego Rossi has, like, I think that he's just going to hit another level. And I think that he's, like, he was known more as a goal scorer. I think that he's going to offer a little bit more creativity and chance creation than Zelarayán did. And again, like, Zelarayán is a phenomenal player. And, like, and the goals are so important, and particularly with the way that Cucho was able to help a little bit with creativity. Like, I'm curious to see if that, like, Rossi's going to have more of, like, a number 10 in him than like, the wide, like, goal-scoring winger. Like, so, I don't know. Like, I'm over the moon. If you told me a week ago, dude, like, crew are going to lose Zelarayán, is there any realistic replacement that would make you feel just as good about their chances this season? I'd be like, dude, no, because it takes players a little while to get into this league. It'd be unfair to expect somebody to come in and be Lucas Zelarayán. Like, today, like, Diego Ross, like, I don't feel any worse about the crew than I did, than like I would have a week and a half ago. And like, I didn't think that was possible.
Yeah, I don't feel any worse either. And Wilfred Nancy and Tim Bezbachinko, it seems like they have a preference for going after players that have proven themselves in MLS. You know, they went out and got Christian Ramirez in the offseason. He's been phenomenal for the Columbus Crew. Now they went out and get Diego Rossi, who's proven it with LAFC, Golden Boot winner, joining the highest scoring team in MLS. Like, that's a high powered
and adding Julian Gressel to a team that didn't have him before is just fucking unreal, man. It was a wild window. It's awesome.
Yes, it was. All right, now back to Lucas really quick. So the first number I saw on the transfer fee was 2.5 mil. The Columbus Dispatch later revealed it was like 6 to 7 mil. Then Transfer Market came out and said it was more so around 3. Have you heard an official number?
I haven't heard anything, so I can't even wait into this. I have no idea.
All right. Well,
cool. But even on this, it's like Zelarayán, like, his contract was up soon, and the crew weren't like, were you going to ask another question about Zara? I don't want to preempt all this stuff, but
I was gonna take your answer and just roll.
Okay, so like, this idea that it was, you know, oh, we got blocked from having Zelarayán, like, that's the only reason why he left. Like, I think that's convenient spin. I'm sure they would have liked to keep him, but like, as far as I understand it, like, well, I know that Zelarayán's getting a lot more money, and as far as I understand it, this was kind of like, hey, we have to consider this offer. Would you want new contract talks? Like, the crew, if their only goal was to keep Lucas Zelarayán, they could have just rejected the offer, or said, reject the offer and let's talk about a new contract. Or like, hey, we'll talk about it in the offseason. Like, and that wasn't what happened. And so again, I don't know the exact specific, I can't sit here and say like I was in the crew's war room. I don't know if it was, all right, like, we want to go get Rossi. And then here comes like Zelarayán, we got an offer from him. Like, let's make that happen. Or if it was, all right, there's some buzz around Zelarayán. We don't know if we're gonna give him the contract he wants. This might be a problem. And then Rossi, so like, again, I don't know exactly what the order of operations were, but like, I can tell you, it wasn't like everybody crying and saying we don't want him to leave. We don't have any other choice though. Like, again, everybody had choices, and Zelarayán himself too. Like, this is a very lucrative deal for him, and I'm happy for him. Then like, he and his family get to make that choice. And so, like, I think that it's reductive if we're saying like, well, MLS roster rules or this wouldn't have happened, because like, I just don't think that's true.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit more about that rumor that that sort of deal was blocked, keeping Cucho, Zella, Nagby.
Blocked is just the wrong word.
Right.
Blocked is the wrong word. You know, like, and I understand, I guess, the idea behind it, but like, people see blocked and they're like, well, we brought the paperwork and this is how it was going to happen. And then we had to change all of our plans. It just wasn't financially possible, because Darlington Nagby is over Max Tam. Cucho Hernandez can't be bought down. Lucas Aran can't be bought down. Like, again, we can have the discussion about whether the roster rules should be this way,
right,
but the roster rules are this way. And like, it is what it is. And there's no way to get Diego Rossi without it being a DP, unless that there was. So Atlanta tried to do this with Giacomakis and got told no, where like, they originally were going to have a loan with a purchase option, but the triggers in the purchase option were like, I don't quote me on this exactly, but it was something like he plays 5 games. It was like, obviously it's going to be triggered. And the only reason that it's being quoted that way was so that they could have the first year with him not being a DP. So then Marcelino Moreno could leave. And MLS was like, no, like that's clearly getting around the spirit of the rule. So like, maybe Columbus could have tried that. And like, but then Fenerbahce would have had to take their word that like, I promise you, we're going to pick up this option in the winter. Like, you just need to give us a couple months. So maybe that could happen. But like, I Fenerbahce would have had to play ball. And like, I wouldn't blame Fenerbahce for being like, well, if we don't have it in writing, you can always change your mind, you know? So like, if they really, really try to get creative, then maybe. But like, just in reality, like, this was a deal. You had four DPs if that was the idea. And like, you just can't.
Right, so pretty obviously, it sounds like it couldn't get done. But the question that I've
or cheat better, pay him in Herbalife, pay him off the books, like. But just in terms of like the actual accounting, like that's why. Sorry, go on.
Right, no, you're good. But so the question I posed for you regarding this whole situation, it may shed a different answer, may bring light to a different answer here. So why would veteran GM Tim Bezbachinko, who knows the roster building mechanisms better than most, even try to get something like this done? So if they were to try to, if a buy down in Nagby wasn't possible, were they trying to trade him maybe? And was Bezbachinko seeing if the league would budge maybe a little bit, or was he trying something unprecedented?
Again, like I just reject the premise and look, I can't go out and say with 1000% certainty that like none of this happened. Right. But like you said, if we're using deductive reasoning and with the facts, like I think Tim Bezbachinko knows. Like, that's not possible. And like, again, the most realistic like thought exercise we could do is like, okay, maybe they went down the road of trying to do the loan with purchase option and whatever. But again, maybe like Rossi's contract could very well be more than 1.6 million. In fact, I'm going to assume that it would be, right? Like, so I don't know. I just don't buy it that like, again, like Tim Bezbachinko, like Corey Ray, Issa Tall, like this front office is for me like one of the best in the league and like a ton of experience. Like, these guys were all together in Toronto before the Columbus. Like, I don't know. I find a hard time believing that they were like, oh, like, what do you mean we can't do this? Like, I don't know. Like, maybe they asked, but like, I don't know. I just think that that's suspending belief a little bit.
You mentioned the loan thing. And what's funny, when I was on Twitter yesterday and I started posting about this specific rumor, whatever was going on with the Columbus DPs, somebody actually took a screenshot from the Columbus Crew's roster and it said that Diego Rossi was on loan. So that's very ironic that you even say that. So maybe the Crew were trying to pull a fast one here. I don't know.
Let me say this too. And this is a larger point going back to Miami too. I am so exacerbated by the fact that these roster pages aren't 100% correct. And like,
they're so bad.
I've spent like today, like, trying to explain to people, know that, and it's like, well, the site says that Joseph Martinez is a DP, and I'm like, he's not. But like, I don't blame you for looking at it and being like, well, like, how, explain this. Like, it looks like MLS, like, they're doing themselves no favors, man. Like, these are simple things. Just keep this up to date. Like, yeah. Joseph hasn't been a DP for Miami. He got bought out by Atlanta. The only way this deal would happen is if he could come to Miami without being a DP. But all season on the roster pages, he's listed as a DP. Like, again, like in one breath, when I'm like, oh, like, don't stop being conspiratory. Like, it's not, everything's a conspiracy, all this stuff. And it's like, on the other hand, it's like, yeah, well, like, that's what the league site says, or like what the club site says. And like, again, the same thing. Like, if a fan goes to the Crew site and says, oh, he's on loan, like, I don't know, man. It's just, it's really frustrating. Like, that's, it's so basic, man. Like, what? God.
Simple stuff, right? MLS just keeps tripping over its own feet.
It's unnecessary, like, confusion. Like, and it's completely self-controlled.
Yeah. All right, so one more thing on the Crew. So they signed Julian Gressel, like we said, from Vancouver for up to $850,000 in general allocation money. Was he the best interleague trade signing during this transfer window?
Ooh. If this deal came with he's signing a new contract, like 100% guaranteed, I'd say yes. Because again, I'm a huge, huge fan of Gressel, and like, I think this fit's going to be phenomenal. And I do think that, like, if the Crew are happy, like, I, again, Vancouver wanted to re-sign him and they made a really, really competitive offer, but he wanted to be back east. And again, I got a lot of jokes about Columbus isn't the East Coast, whatever, but like, again, he's much closer to his family, and it's like that, that's what it is. Like, Vancouver couldn't do much there, and like, he liked his time in Vancouver. It's all good vibes, and like, I'm glad kind of how that all worked out between both parties. But if you guaranteed me that he'd have a 3-year contract from this, I think I'd say Gressel because of the value and because of again, how good he is and what the fit is. But Mahalo Poku does it for me slightly. I think he's a phenomenal player. I really do. I think that he's going to be a really good, he is a good fit in Montreal. Sorry, he's had enough games to prove that already. He's a young player. The difference between, like, again, at $1.75 million is expensive and it's deep. But it's all about context. They had a lot of allocation money because of transfers of Mihailovic and Johnston and Ismail Kone. So 1.75 million GAM to them is different than 1.75 million GAM to, I don't know, the LA Galaxy or LAFC. Like, because they have more. That's the best that we can assume, at least, because, again, this is all private information. But, like, I really like that move. And Montreal haven't spent much in terms of transfer fees, like a little bit here and there with U22 guys. So, like, if you're not going to go out and spend $5-6 million on Diego Rossi, then you have to find value where you can. And if you can get someone like Mahalo Poku from within the league, the same way they did Georgi Mihailovic, and going on down the list for Aaron Herrera, it's like, I thought that was a really great move, and I think he'll fit really well there.
Okay. Yep. I figured that was going to be the other one that you would give me. All right. So we've talked about Miami and Columbus. Who are the other teams that would probably round out your top five most successful secondary transfer windows in MLS?
Real Salt Lake is up there. Probably 1-2 with Miami. Like, I think the top tier, like, Miami's got to be a tier. They're all just going to mess stuff. But Salt Lake and Columbus, like, not only, like, the difference between what Salt Lake and Columbus did is that Salt Lake just added. They didn't lose anybody. They didn't lose any starters. And they add Chicho Arango with, like, what they desperately needed to this group. They add a highly rated, rising, one-time Colombian international, Nelson Palacio. They kept Brian Ojeda, and they kept him on a U22 deal, which is interesting. I didn't notice that that's how that one could work. So I was pleasantly surprised to see that. So that was very good. So yeah, Real Salt Lake, I can't say enough good things. Cincinnati, it's like we've forgotten about it because they did their work nicely. Yeah. But they too only added, like, Bupenza took over Brenner's DP spot, and Brenner scored one goal and was not really with the team all season. So the Supporters Shield team just adds a $7 million center forward into the group. Like, so I don't know, like, those are the ones that were really, really good for me.
Okay. All right. So a few other trends from this MLS window that I'd like to discuss before getting out of here. So the first one, teams across MLS have begun to use MLS Next Pro rosters as tools for first team roster construction in the future. Lorenzo Della Valle to LAFC from Juventus. That's a pretty good one. And yeah. Chituro Odunze to Charlotte. Headline both of or those sort of moves. Talk to me about the advantages of teams identifying and signing these players to those contracts.
Yeah, it's really impressive, and I like particularly Charlotte has really invested in that second team. It's been cool to see, like, again, like, they signed Serbian international Petkovic, and if their first team roster is different, he'd be with the first team, but like, it's still $3 million signing that's playing with the second team for a year, right? Like, so there's that. And then they've done a lot more even behind him as well. And now with the goalkeeper, I think it's really smart. And particularly for goalkeepers, like, you can't rotate them in the first team. So like, the second team is so important that he's just going to get to play and play. And then the idea is that he develops and becomes the first team goalkeeper. And again, like, that's in a perfect world. If the plans all work out, you think about, again, like, LAFC couldn't fit the Italian center back on their first team roster, like, I don't know exactly what the hurdle was, whether it was international slots or whatever, but even if he did, like, he would be like their sixth or seventh center back. So, like, all right, come here and play for the second team for 3 months, and then hopefully we'll bring you to the first team. Like, it's, I was a little bit dubious of MLS Next Pro. I was afraid that it might just be like an extension of the academy, and it's like, why not just put your teams in USL? But like, there's been a lot of teams that have been using it really well, Philly and the Red Bulls as well, but they've always been doing really good things. So it is cool to see. And again, and like, it has been good too that like teams haven't been able to use it as like a loophole where like you signed a $3 million player to your second team and then like loan them to the first team or something stupid like that. So like, that's good too. I was afraid of that at first because there's no salary cap, I think, in MLS Next Pro. But yeah, so it's been really good to see.
Yeah. So there was plenty of movement coming into the league, but outgoing transfers felt kind of slow during this transfer window, especially for some of the younger up and coming stars across MLS. Were any young players targeted for big outbound transfers, and who should we be expecting to see go maybe in the winter window?
Yeah, Georgi Petrovic is the first one that comes to mind. I know he's not like quite in the mold of like young player because he's right. MLS star right now. Nonsen and Nottingham put in a couple big bids, got rejected. I understand why New England wants to keep him for the rest of the season. It's difficult, particularly for a goalkeeper, to make a January move. So we'll see where things line up, whether he goes in the winter or not. I thought that there was going to be, and there still is a possibility, there's another month left in the European transfer window. I thought there'd be a possibility that guys like Jack McGlynn and Noel Buck might be like deal agreed for the winter kind of thing. So that's something to watch. But those were kind of the names at the top of my list that hadn't moved. Like Cifuentes was obvious. Castres was obvious. There's a couple like Tati Castellanos, technically an NYCFC player. Like those are the ones that I thought were obvious that were going to happen. And then maybe, you know, McGlynn and Buck in terms of like deal agreed now for the winter.
Because I'm a Crew fan, I have to ask, any news on Aiden Morris? Was there any movement on that front?
Nothing that I've heard. But again, I don't, you know, I like to think of myself as very good insider, but it's not like I know everything, right? And particularly the moves that don't happen, you don't always hear about that, or maybe it takes a couple months to hear about it. So nothing that I've heard, but that doesn't mean that there's nothing, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, I know that he's I'm trying to just be careful to not like mischaracterize anything. Like, I feel pretty strongly that he's somebody who wants to go to Europe at some point, and he's definitely a very ambitious kid. He's definitely believes in himself, as he should. He's a very good player. So I see his future in Europe at some point. Again, he signed a new contract with the Crew, which is good. So we'll see how this develops. But again, nothing that I really know. But again, that doesn't mean that nothing was there.
Yeah. Last one for you. What about Miles Robinson? What's going on with his situation?
Still same old man. And the closer he gets to free agency and not signing a contract with Atlanta, the more likely it feels to me that he's going to leave. Like, I'm surprised I haven't heard more about this, that like on July 1st, he was eligible to sign a pre-contract agreement with teams abroad. Like, I don't know, man. Like, if I was a top championship club or like a bottom half Premier League club, I would have called him on July 1st and been like, hey, what is the asking price? And again, maybe this happens again. Like, I was just saying, I don't know everything, but if I was running a team in England, that's what I'd be doing. But hey, like, let's get this done right now. Like, what will it take? So we'll see, man. Like, I don't know if he's going to come back if Atlanta don't offer him a DP spot. I don't think Atlanta are going to offer him a DP spot. Like, these are all fluid. Things will change, but yeah, that's definitely one that's curious. Carl Spokenegger was talking yesterday in a press conference that like, yeah, nothing's changed. We hope he stays. Like, we feel like we gave him a pretty good offer. So I don't know. We'll see how this one develops.
Okay, cool. Well, Tom, thanks for hopping on episode 100 of MLS Gone Wild, man.
I feel honored to be here for the big even number, the big 100.
Yeah, I've been chasing it for a long time.
Cheers, man. Thank you for having me.
Cheers, Tom. Listeners, thanks for tuning in to MLS Gone Wild, episode 100, featuring Tom Bogert. I promise I won't take so long between episodes anymore. I should be back with some player interviews very soon. Anyways, enjoy the rest of League's Cup, and if your team isn't in it anymore, then too damn bad. Until next time, peace.